Blog Talk Radio.
Element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our laborers for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, move lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media. And because the lives of our heroes and sheroes, who once protected us in our community, do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up. Now is the time. My brothers and sisters, on this Tuesday and these last 2 weeks, it's getting curiouser and curiouser. And as our program for tonight is, in a corrupt society, there is no principle that people feel they must or should honor. In such a society, the just are most vulnerable. Can you say political prisoners? And as our introduction, Nina Simone says, "I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. I would say, because I know." Well, it's important that we say what we know. It's important we say what we think. Because if we're not able to say it, we certainly are not able to do it. And I remember back in the 60s when the Black Panther Party of Chicago, with the leadership of Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., went to James Brown the evening of a performance in Chicago, and they told him if he didn't come up with a political song, there would be no performance. That's why James Brown sang the song, and he made it up. He was a talented young man. He made up, "I'm Black and I'm Proud," and it became a hit. Well, when we say the things we say them because we mean them. We say them because to be able to say them is very important. And if you don't say what you mean, you become self-censorship. You become guilty of self-censorship. And this society does not say what they mean. For example, when Obama was running for election, he said a lot of things. And the moment he was elected, he said, "It's off the table." Well, we now know that he never meant it in the first place. And we accept that. And I was told many years ago, what real corruption is beyond the fact of mere corruption? What real corruption is when everybody knows the corruption is there and we accept it. And I haven't heard a statement such as, "Well, they wouldn't let him do it," so many times that it was ridiculous. Politicians lie, we don't accept the truth. Those who tell the truth are persecuted and prosecuted, and we talked about that last week. And we have these prognosticators all over the idiot box, the television, and they tell us that Vietnamese were going to attack us if we didn't fight. It was a defensive war by America in Vietnam. They were fighting for freedom. Americans were fighting for freedom in Vietnam. Do you remember that? Today I heard that North Korea was threatening the Americans. This was a newscaster talking about she was nervous because Trump wasn't tough enough on the North Koreans. You buy that if you don't know the history of American and Korean relationships. If you don't know that America bombed Korea into the Stone Age, President Johnson threatened to do with Vietnam. If they don't comply, they will die. That is American foreign as well as domestic policy. People who do not comply become labeled as terrorists. We have people who do not comply with the government destruction of natural resources. They're called eco-terrorists. And it goes on and on. People who want to protect animal rights become animal rights terrorists. It's the same old thing. Comply or deny. And the anti-war movement must be anti-war abroad and anti-war at home. And we see at home the cowardly caucus of congressmen of color have done it again. But do we expect any different? They have labeled, if a policeman beats you and you don't bleed fast enough, it will be a terrorist act against the police. We all know that story. At every arrest, the add-on is assault of policemen if you don't lay down and bleed fast enough. Where is the right of self-defense? And that brings me to the gun laws. They want to increase the gun laws. They want to do something about it. Well, we all understand there is a double standard with law. I don't want to see gun laws made more strict because I know who they are going to apply the gun laws to. And there is more than enough law, and there is more than enough double standard of applying the law so that I don't support increasing more law. And as Malcolm X told us, they don't need any more laws. They just need to apply them, fairly. But we know in America there is no such thing as application of laws fairly, and we don't have to look far. We don't have to look at history. All we have to do is look. They're suing now the CEOs of some of the pharmaceuticals for this, episode of drug use. Well, at the same time that Trump is promising $6 billion to cure the disease of opioid use, they're still putting black people in jail around marijuana. Is that believable? And there are people who go along and say, we need more gun control. Well, as I've said all along, the truth has been there for a long time. We just have to pay attention to what the truth is. And along with that, an announcement of what we can do here in New York. Tuesday, July 3rd at 7 p.m., the New York chapter, the National Writers Union, will present a speak out of poets. And we will hear more about that. And I hope to be a part of the celebration by reading some of Frederick Douglass's Independence Day speech at the Rochester Ladies Anti-Slavery Society. That speech is applicable 4th of July, 3rd of July, 5th of July, and always. What have we to be thankful for? And what is good enough for the goose is good enough for the gander. And this is why I read my credo every week. I say it loud because I'm human and I'm proud. And in the words of dear sister, departed sister Lynn Stewart, and I repeat, how is it that those people who spend so much time talking about human rights give up the most valuable and the first human right of all, the right of self-defense? That said, I'm here with my granddaughter, my grandson, who was normally here with us, is on his way to Russia for the soccer tournament. I don't understand that, but I told him I hope he goes to St. Petersburg and other places to look at the cultural aspects of Russia. But my granddaughter, who has returned from China, who is going to be doing Chinese studies and education, is here with me to read one of the events that's taking place in New York tomorrow. Ayanna?
Hi. On Wednesday, June 13th, there's a Defend Your Hood rally outside of City Hall, specifically by the Broadway entrance. 9:30 to 9:40, hard stop of rally. Everyone will line up to enter City Hall building for hearing. 9:40 to 9:50, while in line, check in with Lauren and/or Emirate for communications during hearing. So the rally initially starts at 9 a.m.
Well, thank you for that, Ayanna. And I will tell you, Ayanna's last name is Ayanna Esseline. We all know what that means, and I'm waiting for her to show some of that Esseline, the Esseline type of thought and type of action. That's why she's on the program this evening. And so without further ado, let's go to our, as Sister Betty would say, our Black Panther in residence, Larry Pinkney, who spent 10 years behind the wall and worked to free himself. Larry, are you in the house? Larry Pinkney, are you in the house? We think we have opened your mic. His mic is open. Okay. Let us go to the next caller. Go ahead. Ann Lamb, your mic is open. Are you in the house?
I am in the house. Very happy to hear you.
Your words of wisdom for the world.
All right. Well, I don't know if I have any words of wisdom. I don't consider myself to be especially wise. But I am sending some messages. We saw Jaleel and Seth on Sunday. And, you know, it was nice to see both of them. We saw Seth briefly because he was practicing, of course, for his parole hearing, which happened today. So, fingers crossed. We'll see what happens. Did talk with him this evening. He said it, from his point of view, he said that at least, you know, he held his own and he stuck to what the PPP women wanted him to do, and he thought it went fairly well. But, you know, that's no guarantee. So we don't know who the commissioners were because he's very bad at remembering names. So he said one of them was an older one who's been there before that, you know, Jaleel said that guy's, you know, totally useless. So that's one vote against already. So hopefully if the other two vote for, that would be a good thing. And there's really no reason for them not to, except for, you know, this vicious campaign by the so-called law enforcement who are so enraged at the parole board for following the law in the case of Herman Bell and in the case of John Roussos that they're, you know, foaming at the mouth. So anything is possible. It's very ironic that law enforcement is so angry at people for obeying the law. I find that to be extremely ironic. Anyway, hopefully we'll have some news about Seth. He hopes to know by Friday, and he does have a plan B. We won't go into what it is, but there is a plan B in case he gets turned down, which I would find difficult to do if I were a parole commissioner. You know, the man is going to be 70 years old. He's got congestive heart failure, high blood pressure, and diabetes, which they have been unable to control for 20 years. His last infraction was in 1989, and that was expunged from his record because it was proven to be a false charge. So, you know, the man has, like, no infractions for his entire 45 years of incarceration. And, you know, he's a quiet guy, keeps to himself. Does the usual, mentors young people. He's involved with the Veterans Association there because he is a Vietnam War vet. And, you know, he's hoping, fingers crossed, that, you know, they'll finally see some light and let him come home. So that would be nice. I say also we have to thank his family. His daughter and his granddaughter did tremendous work around this. So, you know, hopefully we will have a positive outcome. But as we say, no guarantee, as we well know. I am not holding my breath. So that's a short report from the gulags, as we say, or the death camps. Jaleel has been fasting for Ramadan. So he says it's been very difficult this year. I know it's not easy to do. And so, of course, when we're visiting him, we're not eating either or drinking. So we're also fasting while we're there, because I cannot eat in front of people who are not eating. And he said he's also been praying a lot. He's been praying a lot for Seth. He's been praying a lot for himself. So I said, okay, tell us the times you pray. We'll pray at the same time. So at least we'll get some energy going. It can't hurt. Bad news, I heard the state had said that they were thinking about appealing the favorable decision from Justice Kelly on Judith Clark getting a de novo hearing because they were capricious and ridiculous. And, of course, they waited to the last possible minute to put in their appeal. So they are appealing, and that appeal is currently in. So we have to watch what happens with that. We have to watch what happens with whatever is going on up in Albany around Herman, where, you know, they're trying to put him back in prison. That does not seem to be highly likely, but anything could happen. So, you know, that's where we are, and it's unfortunate for Judy that, you know, they decided to do that appeal at the last minute, so now she has to wait for that before, if she still gets the de novo. Of course, if they win, she won't get the de novo. So we'll see what happens with that. So it's very right-wingish here in New York State, I must say. Not surprising. And, you know, of course the PBA is gunning for Jahlil now because he's Herman's co-defendant. They've been, like, you know, going crazy trying to keep him in there, saying he should come out in the box, et cetera, et cetera. So he's not holding out any high hopes for himself, shall we say. Uh-huh.
And let us be clear about that. The police organizations have mm-hmm. always been against any type of justice for those who had reason to fight back. Have
exactly.
we forgotten the reason for the civil rights movement? Have we forgotten the reason for the human rights movement? Have we forgotten how to count every 28 hours another person of color is killed? And that's, we don't know about the real numbers. We don't know about the real numbers in history. But when we have a people and political parties who pretend to be left, like the Democrats, you don't
right.
have to do anything to be oppressed. I keep thinking of the young, bright teacher, bright student, Marilyn Zuniga, just crossed the river in East Orange, New Jersey, did everything mm-hmm. right, and her students wrote a letter of good wishes to Mumia Abu-Jamal, was not mm-hmm. guilty, and she was fired, and the Democrats are on their hands. Who's on our side? We must be on our own side. I will stop, and I think Larry is back on.
Good.
No? Okay. We will go to our poet in residence, Raymond Nat Turner, to give us news as to what program is coming up July 3rd. Your mic is open, Raymond Nat Turner.
Oh. Okay, thank you. Tuesday the 3rd of July, we're doing an alternative 4th of July celebration commemorating Frederick Douglass's Independence Day speech at the Rochester Ladies Anti-Slavery Society in 1852. And one of the features of the program will be there will be readers of excerpts from Douglass's speech. Those readers include Margaret Kimberly of Black Agenda Report and our very own Ralph Pointer, I might add. And then our band, Upsurge New York City, will be playing as well. And just if I may, I'm going to just read a quote from Douglass so you get a sense of how timely his speech is, how timeless it is. The quote is, "Go search where you will, roam through all the monarchies and despotisms of the old world. Travel through South America, search out every abuse, and when you have found the last, lay your facts side by the side of everyday practices of this nation, and you will say with me that for revolting barbarity and shameless hypocrisy, America reigns without rival." Frederick Douglass. That gives you a sense of just how timeless his words are. And so I hope folks will turn out, and I hope Ann Lamb will be free and she could talk about political prisoners. If that happens, it'll be wonderful. So since I am on now, I have a short piece that I will delve into real quickly. It's called All. It's called All Lives Matter. And a quote from the famous poet John Donne. Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never sin to know for whom the bells toll. It tolled for thee, John Donne.
That
two
is,
celebrities,
you know, it's always...
died. Two celebrities died this week. Pundits pool barrels of ink coast to coast. Kleenex flew from shelves, and Facebook filled with philosophical wealth. So sad, trended, looped exponentially. 123 Palestinians systematically slaughtered. A moment of silence, 70 years.
Whoa. I'm sorry I interrupted there for a minute. Your thoughts and your poetry is so full of thought. You know, it could be short, it could be long. Cut it off at any point. You make a statement. Look forward to July 3rd. Look forward to next week. Thanks for that. And next, we're opening the microphone of Joel Myers. Joel, are you in the house? Joel, are you in the house? Your mic is
yes,
open.
Hello.
I hear you.
Hello.
Yes, I hear you.
Hello. Yes, so, okay.
We'll have to get back to Joel. It was an awful lot of static. Tom, your mic is open. Are you in the house?
Yes, I am. And I want to greet everybody. I was talking to Betty Davis earlier about a critique written by Bruce Dixon, who is a member of the Georgia Green Party and a managing editor of the Black Agenda Report. His critique examines why he believes that the Green Party has not grown much despite the breakdown of the two corporate parties. There was a lot of what he says that I agree with, but I don't know about the party in Georgia, but I know that the Green Party in New York State has grown quite a bit. For a while, we were having a problem just getting on the ballot, which we, in order to do that, we had to have at least 50,000 votes for the governor. In the last gubernatorial election, Howie Hawkins got 185,000 votes. That's quite a growth. I don't know whether Bruce is fully aware of that. And I'm, like I said, I'm not sure how the Green Party is doing in certain other states. Bruce says that the majority of Americans are certainly ready to have more than two parties to participate in the in electoral politics. But he admits that these two parties have passed laws in almost all of the states that make it nearly impossible for third parties to get on the ballot. And in addition, the mass media, owned by billionaires, favor these two parties and charge astronomical sums for parties to be heard on the networks, and are not required. They were at one time, but they're not required anymore to give a certain amount of time to third parties or to organize debates that include third parties. Then Bruce goes on to charge that Green Party politics, quote, are vague and woolly, and that this inhibits the raising of political consciousness of the public. Later on, he also admits that the Green Party platform is clearly anti-imperialist, clearly speaks out against gentrification, clearly is for the replacement of fossil fuels with clean, sustainable energy, makes climate change a very important issue, none of which the Democrats or Republicans can really say that they are, even though Trump hit upon some of these things, like the outsourcing of our economy and these wars overseas, but this was pure political opportunism, of course, on his side. Bruce goes on to say that I'm trying to summarize Bruce's critique, that the Green Party does not have a good way of organizing itself, a small group of people without really clear progressive politics can get together and organize a state party. Here again, I don't think that happened in New York or in California. It might have happened in other states. He uses the organizing techniques that were used by the CIO and the Communist Party USA during the 1930s. But of course, we were in a deep economic collapse in the 1930s, and people's consciousness was revolutionized by the collapse of capitalism, and that so far that has not happened yet in the United States. I would make the argument that the Green Party will not really get any place until there is that kind of an economic collapse. In the meantime, we face a overwhelming campaign by the ruling class and their two parties to keep us in the closet, so to speak. Bruce also criticizes the Greens for tokenism, that we often will allow people of color or gays or women to assume to be candidates merely because they are people of color or women or gays, regardless of what their political philosophy is. So all of this is somewhat true, but as I said before, I really believe that until the economic situation in this country becomes much, much worse, the Greens are going to be sort of a marginal party, like all of the other so-called progressive or socialist parties. What comes to mind is the anti-war movement. While the Republicans were in power, the Democrats put a lot of effort into the anti-war movement, and there were huge demonstrations in this country and throughout the world against starting wars in the Middle East. That was before the U.S. invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan. But the minute Obama was elected, that disappeared completely, and the small socialist parties, including the Green Party, did not have the resources or the members to continue this kind of opposition. So I sent his critique to several people on the blog, and I think it's a very good critique. I don't agree with everything it says. Like I said, he does claim that we depend too much on electoral politics, and that we give people the idea that somehow we actually have a chance to win some of these campaigns, and that is true, that some Greens are not really being upfront with the public on that question. I don't believe, however, we should abandon electoral politics. What we should do is use electoral politics to expose the system, to offer a clear anti-capitalist, anti-racist, pro-environmental platform to help build the consciousness of the American public, because as capitalism implodes, and we see that happening, if we don't have a substantial number of people, particularly in the working class, who has some idea of progressive politics, this country could very easily go into out-and-out dictatorial fascism like what happened in Germany.
Well, thank you so much for that, Tom. But we must remember that electoral politics is a method of getting people involved. And no, not going to win today, and maybe not even tomorrow, but people must be educated. And that brings us to the issue of education, education, education. And we talk about political prisoners. We're talking about the people who understood and tried to educate and were incarcerated, put in the death camps. And our objective is to free them. And so we must continue that work because that is the work of educating people.
I agree.
When I say
what
I believe, that's an education. Now, if we can't use self-defense, as Bruce Dixon also said, and if we can't use electoral politics, as Bruce Dixon also said, what do we use? But we have our long-term brother, who is a Black Panther, who spent 10 years in the gulag, on the line, Larry Pinckney. Do you have any words of wisdom for us this week? Your mic is open. Your mic is open, Larry. 7963. Okay, let us go to Joel. Your mic is open, Larry.
Yes, hello?
Okay, go
can
ahead,
can you hear
Joel.
Me?
I can hear you.
Yeah. Okay, I don't know what happened last time. I guess you were able to hear me, and then somehow it faded out or whatever. But anyway, I'm really impressed by all the information, that very interesting analysis of the perspective of the Green Party and other parties that are taking a more principled position and not just falling in with the big business duopoly, Democratic Republican, not really party. Those aren't really parties. They're brainwashing outfits, I think. Should be stripped of that name party, because party is supposed to be an organization where groups of real people contend for power and contend for the type of policies that are going to be put forward with at least some input from the ground up, rather than just dictation from the top down, as cleverly as that's disguised through this duopoly structure, where what we have is a capitalist monster with a deep state, with deep pockets, big money rule, and it walks on a right foot and a left foot, and it alternates between the two. It passes the weight from one to the other. And then an election comes, and the election is, do you want to be hit with a straight right to the face, or would you rather take a left hook to the jaw? Those are the real choices that we're given in these so-called elections. And on top of it, for the last few elections at least, there's been not only a total media-created suffocation of all parties in opposition to the duopoly, but even within, between those parties, a strong element of cheating and miscounting the votes, depending on which candidate of the two bootlickers of the ruling class they prefer to put in, and the way in which they want to shape a certain mandate, to say that, well, you know, this candidate over here promised more environmentalism, promised bring Social Security and Medicare onto a secure financial basis, and so on. And the people voted against that plan. That means that democratically, the source of power is hidden, and it's made to look as if these policies that are injurious to the overwhelming bulk of the people are coming from the majority of the people themselves, whereas the majority is crowded out from any real electoral expression. And we come back to that old phrase that kindled a revolt in this country some time ago, that taxation without representation is tyranny. And we're all being taxed, and we're not being represented, even though formally we are represented. Every district has some representative, but it represents the big money interests and not the overwhelming majority of the people. And as I say, even within that, we have no reason to believe their figures. For example, in the in this last presidential election, where it said that all these states had a swing towards Trump, we find there are big discrepancies between the statistics as officially calculated and so-called recorded, and all the exit polls where people said that they voted very differently from the way it came out, just like what happened in Florida in 2000, where Bush was able to steal the election. The networks had already called the election in favor of the Democratic Party at that time, but what happened was that they interviewed Bush. He was sitting around a table at his ranch with his family, and they asked him, well, they said, it looks like you lost the election. You're going to make your concession speech. He said, look, my brother is the governor of Florida. Now, this is after the polls had closed. My brother is the governor of Florida, and Tom Ridge, who's the governor of Pennsylvania, is a very close friend of mine, and they are going to deliver their states to me. And now you ask, well, how could they deliver their states after the polls have closed and the media networks have already called the race the other way? Well, not in the case of Pennsylvania, but in the case of Florida, all of a sudden there was a flip-flop with Bush being declared the winner. And this was all endorsed by the Supreme Court. And it's just a total in-your-face hocus-pocus. And then the media got together, actually, and they did a recount on their own. And this was big media, Wall Street Journal, Daily News, New York Times, NBC, CBS. They were all involved in this recount, and it came out on November 10th that the Democrats had won Florida by over 3,000 votes. And yet that report, which had been ballyhooed before it came out, there were a lot of stories about the media doing this recount. Once the results were announced, it was totally buried. It was hardly even covered in the paper, and of course, it was buried in the cacophony of the media afterwards. So that an election was stolen directly. You had a basically not to cast aspersions on squatters, but you had somebody squatting the White House with the support, even of the media that did the survey that proved that it was false. So they don't even care whether it looks like they're telling the truth or not. And we have to be organized in a way so that the people can really express what they want and not just have a negative choice a straight right to the face or a left hook to the jaw as the choice that we're given.
Thank you so much for that, Joel, because that's a great example. And we're going to give the last minute to Larry Pinkney. Your microphone is open.
All right, can you hear me? Can I be heard?
Yes.
All right, I want to apologize to everyone. I was, in fact, on the phone. I don't know what happened. I guess we had technical difficulties. What I'd like to do at this point in time is perhaps a preface of what I'd like to talk about next week. I'm not going to try to get all of this in this week, but I will say this, that there are two people that I'd like to hone in on at the next show. And Kevin Rashid Johnson, political prisoner, And I think we all need to know a lot about him and what he has gone through, what he has been doing on behalf of other prisoners. The other person is John Clichette, Soledad brother, John Clichette. And I say Soledad brother, I'm assuming that people know what I'm talking about when I say the Soledad brothers. But John was one of the Soledad brothers in Quentin, in San Quentin, California, along, of course, with the late in none other than George. But there's a great deal of information. I want to thank Sister Professor. She kept me updated and a bit more research myself, but I want to thank her very much for the information that she forwarded on to me. It's much appreciated. But I want to go into some detail, so I'm not going to try to do it quickly right now. So perhaps if it's okay, again, I apologize for the technical difficulties that we had earlier in the show. And next week, I'm looking forward to going into some very, very specific details about both of these brothers.
Okay, well, thank you for that. If you're finished, we have 8 minutes, and I would like to get into the issue of how the system really works. And at the Left Forum, Glenn Ford gave a very clear example of how this stranglehold of the two-party system works with his family in Mississippi, because the Republicans are cast as the white man's party. And so if you're black, you seem to have one choice. You certainly can't vote for the white man's party, and so you must vote for the party that proposes, and we've been very clear about how we analyze the Democratic Party. It proposes to be the black man's party. But in fact, they are not. And as Joel explained, that they do a dance, and it's a left foot or a right foot dance, but it is the same dance. And it's used to a lesser effect, but very effectively throughout the country. The Democrats are supposed to be a progressive party, but we see Nancy Pelosi is hardly progressive. The Black Caucus, all Democrats, are hardly progressive. And so we go through this song and dance of those who lie, and the lie is accepted by the public. That's when it is really corrupt. That's when corruption reigns, and those who speak truth are put in the death camps. And as we started out in the beginning of the program, in a corrupt society, there is no principle that people feel they must should honor. Such a society, the just are most vulnerable. Can you say political prisoner? Now, while we're saying political prisoner, I'm going to ask Anne if she would like to speak about the upcoming events for MoMEA. Anne, your mic is open.
Oh, I'd love to speak about the upcoming event for MoMEA. As you know, we have been trying to wrest from the DA the proof that Castillo, was totally involved in his case. This is a way to open the door for him to get a new trial, not only in his case, but in, I believe, 16 other cases in Pennsylvania that are based on this Supreme Court ruling that, you know, it's not fair for somebody who is a judge in one trial to then preside over another trial at a higher level. So Castillo, of course, has been denying this. Is something before that?
Same trial at a higher level. Otherwise, make a decision on to validate themselves.
Exactly.
Otherwise,
that's what they're doing.
The judge
and the evidence is already there. You know, actually, they're stonewalling, but the evidence is already there. You know, Castile wants to claim that he was never asked to recuse himself. And we know for a fact that various legal teams did ask him to recuse himself. So that is on the record. So for them to say there is no evidence is, you know, just ridiculous. So, you know, they've been dragging this out for months and months and months and months. Meanwhile, you know, Mumia has not well, whatever he has that's going on with his skin and all this stuff. We don't know if that's the cirrhosis of the liver, which we know he does have because they waited so long for him to get the Hep C treatment. So even if he no longer has Hep C, which is not certain, he certainly has cirrhosis of the liver, and he has been suffering greatly. So that's part of the reason, I think, that, you know, they're dragging this out. And also the new DA, Kramer, you know, he ran on this progressive platform that he was not going to, you know, have business as usual and blah, blah, blah. But we see that in the case of our political prisoners, you know, some people call this the Mumia exception. I call it the political prisoner exception because it applies just as well to the Move 9, who are still getting turned down for parole over and over again due to the Philly DA's office input into that. So he clearly has not changed any of the things he said he was going to do. You know, he sort of ran on this progressive platform. People had some hopes, but, you know, it's not happening. So it's really important for people to mobilize to court for this. And we will certainly all be there as much as possible and continue to make the same demands. And as I'm sitting here talking about this, I'm looking at something that was on The Intercept. Now, this is just something very interesting. New York gang database expanded by 70% under Mayor Bill de Blasio.
There,
what do you think of that?
You,
yep.
There you have it, the supposed, the so-called, as
the so-called
Elijah
progressives, Mount. Right?
Yes. And there are people still will say they won't let him do it. Well, they let him go the other way, and he goes the other way very happily, as
very
he
happily.
Saw on the issue of parole, you know,
yep.
On the issue of leaving Herman Bell out. And we saw that de Blasio, the so-called progressive, and Cuomo, the so-called progressive, and
yep.
As Lynn Stewart said, of both just other party acts, one from Queens and one from New York. And again, the words of Lynn Stewart, the law is whatever they say it is at
right.
any and the
this
double standard and the double application. The false application of law. You know, it's gun control. Who are they going to control? Sir?
All right, now, but speaking of gangs, now there's something happening here tomorrow, right here in New York City. Major New York City Council hearing on NYPD gang policing. It's going down tomorrow at City Hall, right, at 9 a.m. So people are being encouraged to turn out. The cops will be testifying to get more funds and power, so we the people must be there too, right? So they're going to start at 9 a.m. They're going to rally outside City Hall, specifically by the Broadway entrance. Folks, please meet here specifically, not in front of City Hall steps. Then from 9:30 to 9:40, everybody's going to line up to enter the City Hall building for the hearing, and that's in the committee room. And then while in line, they're going to check in with Lauren and or Amrit for communications during hearing. Blah, blah, blah. You know, they're just trying to fill out some roles and stuff here. But anyway, this will definitely be happening. There will be people giving testimony as well as the police giving their testimony. So I think this is real important because there have been a lot of so-called gang raids here, you know, and that they just basically decide that, you know, young people, you know, who live in public housing must be gang members, you know, based on nothing. You know, they've been watching these kids since they're really, really, you know, 12, 13 years old, looking at their Facebook posts, this and that. You know, it's none of their damn business. You know, it's mostly just young kids hanging out.
I would like to see the lives, the mothers, the stolen lives to be there to to...
I'm sure some of them will be there. This is, you know, a whole group called Stop the Raids New York City, because they've been doing this more and more. And then, not only that, but they're charging these young people under RICO. So, you know, we haven't seen that in a long time, that they're charging all these young folk under RICO. So, you know, this is real serious, because they can give these young folk really long times based on RICO. And
like they did on the mob, racketeering, influence, and corrupt organization.
Right.
Hardly
like they did to our political prisoners. They use RICO against our political prisoners.
That sounds like the police, racketeering, influence, and corrupt organization. And that
yeah, they are
a
racketeering, influence, and corrupt organization, that's for sure.
And look forward to hearing all and talking with everyone next week. Love you all.
Love you too.
Good night. I wish I knew how it would feel.